Hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined by Matt Oper. How's it going today, Matt?
It's going very well. I have what sounds like a tornado raging outside my window, so I'm really excited about that. It's really going to spice up my day off. And that hurricane, that tornado, that's a very good metaphor for what Navy did to UC's defense. Just threw it all over the field without throwing at all.
Yeah, the thorough disregard for Cincinnati's run defense has never been seen before because no UC opponent had ever run for that many yards before. So, in a way, it was a historical day for the defense. Just not the good history.
That's actually an accomplishment for, given how bad UC was for as long as they were very bad, for that to be the worst it's been. It's something.
So you don't expect records like that, especially in 2017. Like, maybe you expect the passing record to fall. You don't expect to get run on like crazy. Navy had 569 yards of rush offense on nearly 8 yards a carry. Only ruined because they took a pair of knees at the end of the game.
Yeah, I mean, they were just, they felt bad. It was just, like, the worst game was, I mean, we're just going to jump straight into the analysis. We're not going to beat around the bush. We all know what happened. It was a week ago. If you don't know and you haven't watched the game yet, I got nothing for you. It's Friday. You should have done this by now. Anyways, it seemed like UC came into the game with a very concrete plan to stop the dive. They were most concerned about the inside of the tackles plays because generally when you're playing against an option team, that's where the big plays come from because most defenses are set. They set up against the option unlike they will against any other offense where they're going to funnel everything from the outside to the inside, right? UC took the opposite approach and just left the corners of the defense just wide open. And most worryingly of all is that once it became clear that the original plan wasn't working, there wasn't much of an adjustment. I mean, that doesn't mean they changed some things, but it wasn't like a noticeable thing where it's like, oh, look, our corners are now staying on the line of scrimmage and fighting the receivers from the snap, trying to disrupt plays in the backfield. Like, no, they still played, you know, 7-8 yards off the ball, worried about the pass for some reason. You know, it's not like Navy's a team that will comfortably throw the ball 0 times. Oh, yeah, they will comfortably throw the ball 0 times and be fine not throwing the ball at all in a game. They've done it many, many times before. It's kind of a tradition. They long for the ass-kicking where they don't have to even attempt to pass. But they did attempt a couple passes. They did not go well for UC. But the biggest problem was they just had no answers for the outside option. Like, time after time, you would see them take the dive man, somebody take the quarterback, but no one was ever there for the pitch man. Where were the safeties all game? I haven't a clue.
They were not playing very well, it seemed. I think a lot of credit does have to go to Navy's receivers, who have the most thankless job in the nation, since they pass, like 3 times this game on average. And they are expected to block every single down, and they did a really good job at really cutting off UC's corners. It did not help that seemed every angle UC took on any pitch was the absolute wrong one, where they would go, you know, like diagonally towards the running back. The running back was swinging outside, already past them. And it seemed like Navy, like when they did attempt their passes, like they threw them just often enough to keep UC off balance. And as you mentioned, UC did not defend the pass very well. They got lucky on the very first attempt that it was a touchdown pass. The guy just couldn't quite get it. Then they hit their other 2 passes for 50 yards. So, like, that didn't go great. It's just really a bad day for almost pretty much everyone on the defense.
No one had a good game. No one. I mean, there a lot of people had a lot of tackles because they ran the ball 70 times and running plays often result in tackles. A lot more frequently than passes do anyways. Yeah, it was just... It had nothing to do with effort. It had nothing to do with talent. It's just they were not prepared for Navy. And I'm sympathetic to the defense because you can watch, you know, you can prepare all offseason. You can have guys, you know, running your scout team who have been option quarterbacks before. You can mimic their schemes as much as possible for as long as possible. I mean, this is probably the game they were, you know, focusing on the most in the offseason because it's such a unique challenge for a defense that hasn't really faced anything like that. And all the scouting, all the prep, you know, all the runs against the scout team, nothing can prepare you for this kind of offense because it's not schematic, right? It is, you know what the scheme is. You know what they're going to do. They have, you know, they have their four or five base runs. They have counters off the counters. But we're not talking about, you know, 40 run concepts. There are probably eight running plays you have to worry about, right, in terms of blocking schemes. Eight different running schemes you have to worry about. But nothing can prepare you for the pace at which they play that, right, like because they execute so quickly. And you can take a athletic, mobile quarterback who's been been in the shotgun and the spread his entire career and make him act like an option quarterback, but that's not going to make him an option quarterback because it just requires a completely different mindset and skill set, frankly. And it's just they had no answers for the level of execution that they faced from Navy. And it's just after the first half, I mean, the defense was marginally better, but it still wasn't great. I still had no faith in them.
Yeah, like the two biggest stats that I think, like, if you look at the tackling, are tackles for loss. They had two tackles for loss. Navy lost 3 yards rushing. Like, that's just insane. They ran the ball 70 times, taking out the two kneels, and they lost 3 running yards. Like you mentioned, like, the decision-making. It seems like Abby, their quarterback for Navy, made the right decision every single time. Like, and UC was definitely not ready for how late the pitches came. It seemed like they'd have, like, oh, this is definitely a quarterback run. And he did run the ball 20 times. But then, like, he'd just pitch it out to Perry or the high guy or Brown. And, like, they just bust off 20 yards or 10 yards. And, like, UC just could never get a rhythm. Like, as you mentioned, like, right from the start, Navy ran for 99 yards on the first drive because of penalties. Like, that's a lot of yards in one drive to give up on the ground. And it was pretty much an indicator of things to come.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the scheme that they run is designed, it's set up in such a way that the defense can't be right. When run correctly, the defense is always wrong, right? That's just how this scheme works. And in the best of scenarios, if you execute perfectly, they're going to go through all three options and probably still get 3 yards or 2 yards, right? Like, that's the best case scenario. If the pitch man is getting the ball and he only gets 2 yards, A-plus job, right? But UC made it very easy for them by having so much confusion about assignments. Like, it was very common to see the defensive tackle, the end, the outside linebacker, all, like, collapsing on the dive man, or all going for the pitch man, or all going for the quarterback. And, like, those assignments have to be dispersed throughout the defense. But you could not tell that they were. So there was just a lot of confusion. And if you are confused about what your assignment is playing a team like Navy, it's not going to go well. And it really didn't go well. It was aggressively bad.
Yeah, they're one of those teams, like, if you make the wrong read or anything, you're giving up a big play. It's just how their offense is set up and how they take advantage of you. And, like, unfortunately, it was really, really bad. Like, I don't think any of the linebackers had a real great game. Like, you mentioned the secondary. Like, none of them, like, really show up on the stats besides Carter Jacobs, who, like, if you're wondering, like, who the fans on Twitter have made the scapegoat, it's Carter Jacobs, which makes me feel bad for Carter Jacobs. But also, he's in a lot of plays that end up pretty far down the field, which I guess isn't great either.
Yeah, but we're talking about Twitter wisdom here. So if Twitter is all mad at somebody, that means that he probably did not actually make the mistake, but just ended up in the play because he was trying to correct for the mistake that another person made. Like, that's Twitter coaching. Yelling at the guy who realized that things were going to shit and tried to stop it, but couldn't, and was late, and thus looked like it was his fault.
If you see the back of somebody's jersey, you might pretty much just assume that guy fucked up. It's like, especially when they don't show the replay, and you can't see, like, the corner just, like, not doing anything, and somebody trying to run over and help. And, I don't know, it just seems like people are really picking on Jacobs, which is my overall point. I don't really like it. It's like he's in college, and he's not going to be a pro. So cut him a little slack.
Yeah, and, the frustration I get, because you saw Navy run the same variation on their concepts, and it just seemed like the end result never changed, right? It was, you know, Zekaby got all the way to the corner, nobody was there, somebody flies up out of nowhere, out of control, can't make the tackle, and he just pitches it to the B-back, and nobody's there. And no one was there all day. I don't know how many times they actually got to the B-back, but it seemed like if that guy got the ball, it was 20 yards every time. And the B-back probably only got the ball 15, 20 times. But if you're doing 20 yards a pop on those plays, that's a substantial amount of yardage, which is fitting because Navy got a substantial amount of yardage on the ground.
Yeah, just like running through their yards per carry, the EB 6.4, Malcolm Perry, 10 carries, 100 yards. That high was like the inside guy pretty much. He only averaged 5 yards a carry. That Brown, 19.8 yards. Walker, 11.3. That Keone Macau, I brutalized his name. That 3 carries, 33 yards. Like, even like their scrub backs, like, just got huge gains. It was not a great defensive effort by any stretch.
In their defense, like, it seemed like the whole game plan was to take away the inside run, and they did. You know, AB and High, those are the two inside backs. Those are the ones that are going to get the majority of the carries going up the middle, and they held them relatively in check. They didn't stop them, but, you know, you can live with 5 yards a carry. Where they didn't do so well is everything outside the tackle box. Like, that vast expanse of green, there were no white shirts there.
Yeah, it's just like one of those things where, like, the college hashes are different. But it looked like their side of the field, like, where they were just running the option, was like a million yards long, and like their guys just cut up everywhere. So let's turn positive a little bit. The thing everybody was rallying around was the offense looked actually good for once. Hayden Moore had his second best game as a Bearcat. He threw for 381 yards, 3 touchdowns. Khalil Lewis and Devin Gray both had, like, pretty solid games, especially Gray had 100 yards and a touchdown. And, like, it just seemed like they finally had some of the offense going. Like, I know Navy's defense is not great, especially their pass defense is pretty bad. But, like, it was good to see at least some continuation from the second half of the Miami game.
Yeah, it seems like Hayden more finally has a little bit of confidence of what he's doing, and more importantly, he knows what the object is, right? You know, this isn't an offense that is built on downfield passing. It is a horizontal-based offense. They don't really do anything much beyond intermediate routes. And that's fine. Like, you can have a successful offense just throwing, you know, five-yard bubble screens and quick outs and quick slants and all that. The thing with Hayden Moore is, like, everything, like, all good comes with a slight downside. And he's just, he's so maddeningly inconsistent that it's, like, yeah, that was a great game. But he also, you know, had you seen driving for a chance to, you know, maybe not win, but, you know, in a position to make it a game and make it interesting late. And what does he do? He gives up a strip sack in the only, in the worst possible spot where you can't really, you just can't take that sack. You have to be aware. And, you know, it's a free blitzer from the corner. Generally, that is, you know, anything that coming from outside the tackle box is considered the quarterback's man because it's going to take him longer to get there. So he has to be aware enough to, you know, see it, check out of the play, do whatever, but never saw it, got stripped. That was that.
Yeah, that was a pretty gigantic breakdown on that sack. Like watching it back, they had six blockers for like five Navy rushers. And the guard and tackle had some pretty poor communication because they just let that guy get way too far before the tackle released to try to block him out. But like as you mentioned, Moore should have like recognized something and gotten rid of it at the very least. But I think the biggest concern I have with the offense is how much they really lean on Moore to make anything happen. Like, it's become a trend. Like, they just don't really care about running the ball. Like, everything is in Hayden Moore's hands. And I think that's part of the reason why the offense has been so up and down. That's because he's been so up and down. And if he's really your focal point of the offense, like no offense to Hayden Moore, but like that's why your offense ranks really low. And that's why you're not scoring a ton of points per game. And like that's why you're 2-2 right now instead of maybe 3-1.
Yeah, I mean, like, if your offense is all set up so that the quarterback is going to be the point man and you go as far as the quarterback takes you, and your quarterback is just maddeningly, incredibly inconsistent down to down, guess what your offense is going to be? Total crapshoot. No idea what's going to happen one play to the next. Anything can happen. The biggest question for the offense coming into the season was, well, what's the identity going to be? How are they going to figure that out? You know, are they going to be a running team? You know, what's Mike Denbrock's – what does a Mike Denbrock offense look like? We're a month in. There is still no answer to that question. What does a Mike Denbrock offense look like? I don't know. A guy throwing shit against the wall to see what sticks? That's what it looks like.
Yeah, like what is their identity? Like, I can't answer that question. Like, can you? Like, they don't really have any explosive plays. Like as you mentioned, they kind of go horizontal, like West Coast with their passing game. And, like, I know Mike Boone's hurt, but there's just been no running game to speak of, even with Mike Boone. He's averaging, let's see, you can do the quick math, he's averaging like 70 yards a game. Like, that's really not great anyway. It's like, I really wonder, like, where, like, big picture this offense is going to end up at the end of the year.
Yeah, that's a very good question. I really think it all comes back to, it comes back to a couple things. Hayden Moore is Hayden Moore, right? And he's inconsistent. He's got a definite ceiling. He's got a definite floor. And he can be on the floor or on the ceiling. Like, he can be on the floor and the ceiling at the same time. Or like, within plays, right? That's just kind of his MO. That's what he does. The biggest question is, how does this offensive line get better, right? because they're just not that good right now. And, you know, you're starting three former walk-ons on the interior of your line. Like, that's not a walk-on. Like, that's not a knock-on walk-on. Like, UC has a long, proud, you know, tradition of good walk-ons becoming contributors, you know, going from, you know, Adam Dempsey all the way back to Jason Kelsey. Like that is not in and of itself a knock-on walk-ons. What that is saying is, in an ideal world, your walk-ons provide depth. They aren't the frontline players. That's what you want scholarships. You want the guys that you recruit as 18-year-olds to become mainline contributors when they're 20 up front. And if that doesn't happen, you have to go this route. And it can work, and it can be okay, and it can be a stopgap solution, but that's not where you want to be, and that's where they're at.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a really great point, because that has to be the reason they don't trust the running game. It's because they don't trust the line. Like, we've seen, like, if you, like, put UC into passing downs, like your third and longs and, like, what have you, like, we've seen them through, like, an elite defense in Michigan, like, a not-great defense in Navy, and I'll just be generous and call Miami, like, average. Like, and those teams, like, really have been able to get pressure and, like, force UC, like, into bad situations when, like, you know they're going to throw it. Just looking through the overall numbers, like, UC's averaging 4.6 yards a play, like, 5.6 yards a pass, 3.1 yards a run. Like, all of those numbers are really, really god-awful. And I think, like, a large part of it is, like, some of the weird play calling, I would say. But, like, a lot of it is the line as well, especially the running game. That has to be the only answer to why they don't run the ball that much.
Yeah, and it's not just that they don't try to run the ball, it's that there's really doesn't seem to be any great idea about where they should be running the ball. And I mean that, like, so what's your go-to play? Is it going to be inside zone? Is it outside zone? Is it power? Is it counter? What is it? Four games in, I have no fucking clue. The most successful plays of the year have been, like, draw plays. You can't live on draw plays. Because eventually people just sit on them, and then that well dries up very quickly. Yeah, like, they can't execute the basic concepts well enough to routinely spring their running backs for any sort of gain. So that's not ideal.
Next, we're looking at, like, a second year in a row where, like, their longest run is in the 20s. Like, they're longer. Well, they did have one big run. It was by Hayden Moore. That kind of doesn't really count. Like, Boone had the one big run against Austin Peay. And, like, Warren had a big run, I think, last week. And, like, Doak's had a 20-yard run. And, like, your longest run by running that is 26 yards. Which is, like, not great. Your longest pass is 46 yards. Like, they haven't hit a 50-yard play this year.
Yeah, but that 46-yard pass went 2 yards.
Well, but, like,
it was a screen.
The way they talked up the offense, I know that's all coach, like, speak bullshit. Like, if you're going to talk up the offense and make, oh, we're going to go deep. Like, we're going to really try to explode things. And, like, then it's all short stuff. I think they have one long pass to Pickney. Like, that probably was it. And they had the screen. Like, yeah. I can really, Lewis's longest catch is 30 yards. Gettys's longest catch is 27 yards.
Yeah, I'm not sure where that's the conception of the offense or Hayden Moore. Like, I'm not sure where to draw the line there, because we have a lot of experience with Hayden Moore. Like, this is a guy who in the last 2 years is just... It is terrified to throw anything between the hashes because bad things happen every time he tries, right? So if you're not going to work the middle, you're not going to work the middle third of the offense of the field, that's a problem. Especially when you're not willing to push the ball vertically down the field on either sideline. So if everything that you like, if the only spot you're comfortable working in is that little box between the hashes, 10 to 15 yards deep, like if that's your box, that's really easy for a defense to defend. Because they don't really have to respect the rest of your routes. Like, you know, they'll put a guy there, but they know it's not really going to go there because you never go there. Like, with the level of scouting that's available to most of these staffs, right, like, that is a glaring tendency that's not going to be best. And, like, I'm casually picking this up, watching game on my shitty ESPN 3 feed with, you know, blurry internet because my ISP sucks. And I'm seeing that. So people whose job it is to see this, they dream of that because it's like, oh, yeah, it's a relatively easy week because we know exactly what they're going to do. We know where they're comfortable. Like, they have to be more willing to try to break tendencies than they have been in the first four games. And maybe they will be because, you know, this was a tough opening stretch, right? You know, Miami choked away that game and responded fantastically by going, you know, to Mount Pleasant and beating the hell out of Central Michigan. You know, that's not something that you're going to scream from the rafters about, but that's a pretty good response from a team that I think is actually going to be pretty good. Michigan's a very good team. Navy is still Navy. I don't think they're on the level of Memphis and Houston, but they're still very, very good. So, like, this was always going to be a tough stretch to open the season, especially with a new coach, new staff, new schemes, all that. And I guess we can just kind of – I think we put the Navy game to bed, you would say, correct?
Correct.
So, four games into the Luke Fickell era, sitting at 2-2, if you would have talked to me in May and said – first month of the season's down, you're at 2-2, how do you feel? I would have felt great. And I still feel okay. Because I think this team is ahead of schedule. You know, we've been saying from the start, because of how young this team is, because of the new staff, because of the new schemes, all this different stuff, they're going to be a much better team late into the fall than early. And if they can steal a couple games early, that makes getting a bowl game later in the year much more plausible because it's just a slightly easier road to hoe if you already have a couple wins backed. And they have a couple wins backed. So I'm cautiously optimistic about where this team is. That being said, you know, it is what it is. That Navy game was disheartening.
Yeah, I was thinking about, like, writing a piece on like this, but I decided to wait till after the Marshall game just because I kind of been feeling the same thing as you. Like, if, like, we picked at the beginning of the year, which we did, we both thought they would be like around 2-2 or even like 1-3 at worst. So coming out of it as expected, it's good. Like, some of the things we've seen, like, haven't been like as great, but I think overall it seems like they're better than last year, which I think is a pretty important thing to look back on. Like, really how bad they were last year, and, like, how unfun they were to watch. Like, I know the Navy game wasn't, like, a ton of fun, especially since, like, they just got kind of killed. Like, the Michigan game didn't turn out to be that fun. But, like, overall, like, they try hard. And, like, really, if, like, they're going to be, you know, 6-6 or 5-7, like, you want them to try hard every week. And, like, it seems that they do that. Even if, like, their talent level is not where we really want it to be.
Yeah, and there's something to be said for learning how to win. I mean, this is a group of, like, a lot of these guys were here last year. You know, it was one of the most disheartening seasons in UC football history, and that's saying something. They just... It's a completely different experience for them. And on top of that, they are frontline players now and they have to learn how to win games. And that's not something that you can take for granted, right? Like, winning football games is hard. It requires you know, skill, discipline, effort, all that. But it also requires a little bit of luck. And they had one of the luckiest wins ever, I think that's fair to say, against Miami. And, you know, because of that, they're now sitting at 2-2 rather than a more troubling 1-3. Now, how they respond to this Marshall game is going to be a huge litmus test for them, because it's the first time back home in a while. They've had a tough three-game road trip between Michigan, Miami, and Navy. Now they get to come home and play a Marshall team that's okay, I guess. They beat Miami, so we know that. But, I mean, this is a game that UC should win. And how they respond after just getting their ass kicked last week is going to be interesting.
I find this game a lot more interesting than I did just looking at it before the season. Like, Marshall, like, their computer numbers aren't really great. But they did beat Miami. And, like, they did shut out Kent State. Kent State is terrible. Like, arguably one of the worst teams in the nation by far. Like, I saw them play last week. They were really bad. But, like, their defense has been kind of interesting. And, like, this is just the type of opponent, like, UC should be. But it's, like, also the type of game where, like, if you... Where, I don't know, it's kind of hard to gauge where UC really is. Like, they played three road games, and this team's history under Tuberville, which covers everybody on the roster, like, was pretty awful in road games. Like, they still haven't won a conference road game since 2015. And it looks like they're not gonna do that until November, unless things change, like, dramatically. Like, you talked about learning to win. I think this is a pretty big example of that. Like, Marshall's gonna be an interesting opponent, for sure. And, like, they have receivers who have pretty big yards, especially Brady. Like, already has 373 yards. Like, you're gonna be tested in the secondary. It's gonna be interesting to see how the offense responds as well, after six pretty solid quarters.
Yeah, and that is a big question for the offense, is can they maintain this? Because, well, Hayden Moore's your quarterback. Consistency isn't really his bag. So what do you do? How do you go about structuring your game plan so that you get the maximum performance out of Hayden Moore that you can? I guess a defense that is very forgiving. Like, they're not as bad as Navy was in the secondary, but they're not, you know, they're not UCF out here. They're not knocking skulls like that. That's not how they won. Even when they were very, very good with Rakeem Cato and stuff, they were good because they had Rakeem Cato. That was it. There was no other plan B. It wasn't, you know, we're going to stop you. We're just going to score you. Their offense is nowhere near that good anymore. It just kind of is middle of the road. And their defense is better than you would expect, but still not, you know, it's not an elite group by any stretch of the imagination. It's just kind of average. And their strengths kind of line up with UC's, where, you know, they're not a very efficient defense. And because of that, they don't allow big plays, right? So it's not like UC generates big plays. They're not reliant on that. So they will have the ability to kind of grind out drives against this defense. And, you know, I'm a little bit more optimistic about the running game than you are, just because I think that the talent between Dokes and Boone, if Boone ever gets healthy again, is just going to be kind of overwhelming for the level of competition that they're going to be facing. I mean, like, those are two running backs you could probably play at a lot of Power 5 schools.
Yeah, definitely. I don't mean to take anything away from those guys. Just, like, as a whole, the running game just hasn't been, like, impressive at all, really. Like, Dokes has had his moments, but he only had, like, 14 carries in that game against Navy. I'm a bit more interested to see how their running game goes against Marshall. like Marshall's running numbers are like pretty like right on the national average, just like where they rank, and their defensive line and linebackers. They have, like, pretty good run-stop numbers on the football study hall page. And they did play a team in Kent State that, like, runs the option. Like, I think this is one of those games for your offense. If you can, like, get the running game going and those short passes going, you should be able to score on Marshall, like, pretty easy. Like, the lone good team Marshall played was NC State. And the NC State scored 37 on them and won by 17. So it's like one of those type of games, like if you can just put it together on offense, like just not turn the ball over, like you should be able to put up like around 30 points against Marshall.
Yeah, and the interesting thing with this running game is that it's like everything is predicated on the individual brilliance of Mike Boone or Jared Ducks, because like this isn't... Like, good running games, like, really, really good elite running games, they're good because their system is good. Like, they systematically create openings in a way where it doesn't really matter who's touching the ball. Obviously, having more talent helps in life in general, like, in everything. Having more talent at whatever you're trying to do helps. But there are ways to scheme a running game where you just systematically create openings for whoever just happens to be carrying the ball. Right, that's not what UC has. UC has a running game where the running back has to make individual plays to gain anything beyond like 5 yards. Like he has to be brilliant individually to get that, because it's just like the line does not generate the opportunities or the yardage that they need for to have like a healthy functioning normal running game. So they just have to rely on the brilliance of, you know, the flash of brilliance from Booter Dokes or even Warren to generate those big plays. And that's, I don't think that's going away anytime soon.
Yeah, and like we've seen like those guys have the ability to make those big plays. But it's the more of like the every down plays like that have really been missing in the running attack. It seems like their running game, even like last year, been an example of like, oh, there's a 2 yard run, a 3 yard run. Like occasionally they'll break off like a 10 or 15 yard run. Like the like down to down consistency in the running game has really been a mystery that they really haven't been able to figure out. And at times it just seems like they don't really care to figure it out, because like they're going to use the short passes as a running game. And they have gotten the backs more involved in the passing game, especially Dokes. Seems like Dokes has been pretty involved in the past couple of weeks. No, he only has 4 catches. He's had 9 targets.
Yeah, and I'd do whatever I could to manufacture opportunities for him to get the ball, because he's just, once he has the ball in his hands, he's special. I mean, he's so big, he's so powerful, he's so physical. I mean, that combination is not really a rare thing. Or it's not really a common thing. It's pretty rare. I flip that because I'm tired and an old man, apparently.
Yeah, I'm a bit interested. I hope they take the trading wheels, so to speak, off of Dokes. And Warren, for that matter. Like, Warren was a total non-factor in the Navy game, which was kind of interesting. Like, especially with how we didn't really know what the running back depth would be. And it seems like their running backs are too deep, and they don't really trust anybody else. Which, like, maybe that will change as the season goes along. But, what are your overall feelings on this game? Like, the spread is only 3.5 in favor of Cincinnati. Came down, like, a little bit since they opened at 4.5. Over under 52.5 points. So, I kind of think it's definitely going to hit the over again.
Yeah, I think the over is... I wouldn't call it a lock, but it seems pretty likely. And, you know, historically, this is a different team at home. They were rocky, to put it mildly, in the first home game of the year against Austin Peay. It's been almost a month. They're coming back. Let's see what they got. I think this isn't a UC team that's going to be running away from people anytime soon. But I think they're going to end up pulling away from them in the end and winning by a couple scores.
I do think it's rather interesting that for the second week in a row, UC catches somebody coming off a bye week. I know, like, the schools make their own schedules or whatever, and the leagues do that as well. Like, this Marshall game has been penciled in for September 30th for years. But a bit interesting, Marshall gets a bye, just like Navy had a bye. These early season bye weeks, they really make you wonder sometimes. That was very conspiratorial of me.
Yeah, man. Get off your soapbox.
Do you have any other thoughts on this game? Like, where do you see it landing?
I think they're going to hit the over. I think UC probably scores 40 for the first time in 2 years. I say that with a question mark because I genuinely don't know when the last time UC scored 40 points was. That's what it's come to.
That's a good question. One of us will have to look that up as the other one talks. I guess that will be you looking it up while I talk. I think that UC is definitely going to put up around 30. And kind of expect the game to be close for the first half. Like, UC and Navy. UC and Marshall have had the same problem where they've played very terrible first quarters. Like, UC's been outscored 35-17 in the first quarter, which is kind of crazy. And then they both, like, lost the third quarter, and they both won the second and fourth quarter. A lot to varying degrees. Since, like, UC technically won the fourth quarter against Navy, but they won it 8-7 and still lost by double digits. I do expect a much better game from the defense. They won't give up 500 yards rushing.
You are really going out on a limb there.
Somebody had to.
The last time UC scored 40 points, November 14th, 2015, home game against Tulsa, where they won 49-38. That was the last time. So, yeah, it's almost been 2 years.
That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, remember when they said that Cincinnati only played offense? I do. I watched those games. It hasn't been true for a while.
I think it was true that year and then not true. But definitely not true last year. Or this year.
Oh, we're only a third of the way through. It could change. Could. Probably won't, but could.
So we both feel good about this game against Marshall. Especially, it's a night game, isn't it?
7 o'clock.
Nippert at night is always a nice atmosphere. I hope that the people fill it up. At least fill it up like, so it doesn't look terrible at some of the day games. I think the crowd will be all right.
Yeah, and we are almost a little over 10 years to the day since the last time that Marshall came to Cincinnati. And that was a game, that was the first Nippert sellout in a very long time. And officially there was 35,000 people there. There was way more than 35,000 people there. Like, you could not move in the concourses. It was probably 40,000 people. And, you know, the Marshall people rolled up in their RVs and they parked them on the street and had their tailgates on the street. It was quite a culture clash.
And that is a good thing about playing somebody like Marshall, is the opponent section is not going to be empty. Which I guess is good for the stadium. I don't know if it's good for anybody else. But it always makes it more fun when the other team has fans there.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to have a rival. Yeah, besides Miami, that would be cool. But there's literally no one for hundreds of miles in any direction in the conference.
Could try to really kickstart that UConn basketball rivalry over to football.
Yeah. I think UConn's won twice in the last decade.
I think that was the worst suggestion I've ever given anything in my life.
I'd be more interested in Memphis. That'd be more interesting.
Yeah, one of the things I don't really get about the league is why they don't have the cross-division rivals. It seems like they should definitely do that, but they don't. I think it's kind of dumb. Like, maybe just don't I guess you have to play your whole division. I was going to suggest, like, maybe you don't play your whole division, and then you just have one team you always play. But I guess that wouldn't make the divisions fair or something.
No, but the divisions don't make geographical sense as it is now, as Navy, the most easternmost team in the conference, is in the West.
Yeah, they really did not account for that one when they drew things up.
No, they did, because Navy recruits a shit ton of people from Texas, so that's what they thought about.
Touche. I stayed corrected.
They just wanted to make it attractive for Navy. I think, was the thinking. I don't know. Those decisions happened above my head.
So they do go to, like, what, Dallas and Houston every other year, unless they both play them this in the same year. And they, like, go to Tulsa and all that crazy stuff.
Yeah, I think SMU and Houston are staggered so that they're at least in Texas once a year.
That's kind of interesting how they did that. I really paid attention. I didn't know that was the reason why they were in the West.
I don't know if that is actually the case, but that's always what I've been told.
That makes it true then.
Yeah, because that's how facts work.
If you heard it, and then I heard it from you, that means it's a real thing that happens, and we should all go along with it noddingly.
To wit, last year Navy hosted Houston and went to SMU. Maybe there's something to it.
There, I kind of think this has turned into we like broke ground on this. We're the ones who figured everything out.
Yes, we figured out actual facts about things. We're as shocked as you are.
Although my theory about them switching Houston and Tulsa is not true, because they go to Tulsa this year. So I guess that means they do travel west every other year. And there's somebody else out west. There has to be. I can't even remember who else is in the league now.
Are we going to turn this into a live game of Sparkle trivia? Because I'm down for that. I'm good. I'm really good at trivia. I don't forget stupid things, which makes me awesome at trivia.
That's the whole point of trivia.
Yes, and it's has no inherent value of its own.
Quick aside, to go to trivia night at, like, my local bar, and there was, like, a guy on one of the other tables who was on Jeopardy. Like, that just wasn't fair at all. Their team, of course, like, smoked everybody. That might have been the maddest I've been at trivia. Even, like, the sports category, like, they got them all right. Like, that's just cheating.
See, if that guy is at your local trivia night, he needs to be saddled with the most confident and dumbest person of every other team. So, like, they all get voted to his team. And then they badger him with their overconfident wrongness. And eventually he just succumbs, rather than sticking to facts he actually knows. And it's just like, it's just not worth the fight. It's not worth the fight. That's how you beat him, is you make him take on dead weight.
Like, what does the other team do? Like, does the other team, like, huddle up first and then, like, see if they can get the answer? Then, like, the Jeopardy know-it-all is like, oh, no, it's actually Istanbul, or whatever you would say.
Yeah. See, and I have direct experience with this because I'm good at trivia. My cousin is also very good at trivia. And his wife is not. And the three of us would go to a local trivia night where Opie, my cousin, and I would do spectacularly well until we were talked out of all the points we were going to make and by Lindsay, who's just really confident but wrong. So that was our trivia night. Anytime we went. Having the right answer and then being slowly talked out of it.
That's the worst thing. Like the second you doubt yourself, it's the second you change your answer and you miss it. Or you do the opposite and like, oh, I don't think this is right. Then you don't change it and you just feel stupid. I think trivia nights are just around to make you feel stupid.
They're a minefield. They really are.
Speaking of trivia, this was a very trivial conversation. Run down the league real
dude,
quick.
Dude, that is so terrible.
It was not good.
I do not approve of this pun. I do not approve.
Yeah. We just hand out financial advice, not solid puns.
Okay. Our sign up for as many credit cards as you want advice was better than the pun you just made. That's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going to say.
How was the YouTube TV experience? Was that worth it?
Yeah, I'm cutting cable. That's it. It's gone. Yeah, because I get all the sports channels and, like, the regular network ones and like FX and movies, and it's worth it. Yeah, all for $40. I'm not a shill, but if YouTube would like to pay me some of their billions, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, maybe we should start uploading the podcast on YouTube and trying to make that a YouTube money. I don't know how you make money off of YouTube, but we could try.
I think you just had a strong idea.
Now all we have to do is figure out how to make it work, which is the easiest part. Scroll through last week in the league before we look ahead. South Florida crushed Temple. Temple turned the ball over like 7,000 times. And I was wrong about Temple. Yeah, I was very wrong about Temple being not terrible.
Yeah, South Florida, UCF is going to be arguably the game of the year in the conference, right? It's kind of shaping up that way.
Definitely, especially since UCF like went on the road to Maryland. Like, even if Maryland's quarterback didn't get hurt, like they were by far the best team. Like they just destroyed Maryland on pretty much every level. And Scott Frost really turned that program around. I think like that's where you can look at and like hope like Luke Fickell is on that road, where like they're just instantly like credible.
Yeah, and we should all enjoy Scott Frost while we have him, because got about 2 more months, and then he's going back home. I think that's how this is going to end up.
Yeah, there's no chance that he stays there. And there's no chance that Mike Riley survives at Nebraska.
And here's the other thing. There's no chance that he has any kind of like 95 Nebraska-level success at Nebraska, because it's just not capable of sustaining that at this point in time. It'll turn on him eventually and fire him. That's what I'm saying.
Maybe he'll always beat Maryland, and that will be his one Nebraska legacy.
Yep, we'll always have Maryland.
It's really weird Maryland and Nebraska are in the same conference. Like, some things like that just stuck. Oh, Maryland's playing Rutgers, that's a Big Ten game. Still, like, all these years later, it doesn't feel right.
Well, I mean, like, just to have a brief aside, because, you know, this is what we do. We've done, I don't know, how many hundred of these? The dumbest thing Nebraska ever did was to leave the Big 12. And they did it purely out of spite. And just like leaving the Big 12 was the worst thing that Texas A&M ever did, right? They made a lot of money, but they're never going to win at any sort of sustained level because it's just not going to happen. But for Nebraska, like, it's like they flipped both birds to Texas. And then now, 5 years later, they're realizing, oh, shit, we can't recruit Texas anymore. And there's no talent in Nebraska. Kind of a problem. Kind of a problem.
And just where they ended up, like, moving to the Big Ten. It's like, you already up against it with just Ohio State and Michigan. And, like, then, like, Wisconsin. Like, the last decade has been arguably a top 10 program.
No, like, there's... Wisconsin's been awesome for, like, 10 years. Like, they wake up and win 10 games. And it doesn't matter who the coach is, right? That's the other thing. Like, they are just an institutional success. And part of that is the toughest game they have every year in their division is Iowa? Is it Iowa? I think it's Iowa. So if the toughest division game for you is Iowa, that's pretty nice. That's pretty cushy. They've taken advantage.
Yeah, that's not too bad for old Wisconsin. Let's run through the rest really fast. Texas Tech went to Houston and actually played defense and won. That one kind of surprised me a little bit. And then, like, Major Applewhite, like, snapped back at fans, which was always really smart.
Yeah. Yeah, and Texas Tech found a defense. Who knew? Who could have possibly guessed?
Yeah. Tulane held off Army in the game that preceded the Cincinnati Navy game. Is Tulane actually decent? Or are they just not good still? I don't know. It's hard to tell. They seem decent because they changed their logo and everybody likes it.
Yeah, it's an octopus, right? Oh, it's a wave? Oh. Well, that makes more sense. For real, I did think it was an octopus, though. It's got tentacly hands holding a flag. I mean, it's a delightful logo. It's just confusing.
Now we're hitting you with logo takes at the end of this podcast. Tulsa is really bad, and it's a shame UC doesn't play them this year. They lost to New Mexico. They can't play offense anymore, which is a startling twist. SMU, like, destroyed Arkansas State 44-21. So they bounced back, and Memphis only won by 13 against Southern Illinois. Like, they're kind of a weird team so far. Oh! And the Sunday matchup of the year, East Carolina, UConn, was a shootout. Like, we wondered why the over-under in that game was so high. And boy, did we find out.
Yeah, as it turns out, both offenses played against air. They were pretty good against air.
Thomas Cirk threw for 426 yards on 30 of 39 passing. 3 touchdowns. That's not too shabby.
Does ECU win another game this year?
That's a very good question. Let me look up their schedule real quick. On the surface, I would say yes. They'll get at least one team. But it really depends on what other terrible teams they play at home. Oh, they play Temple at home, so I think there's a chance they get Temple. And they play Tulane at home. I think they'll get one of those two teams.
Fair. I don't know. It seemed very one-offy.
Their schedule.
Because you don't.
Go ahead.
Well, you don't expect an offense that's that bad to just all of a sudden light up like the 4th of July. And usually they don't stay lit. This is what I'm saying. Like it is like a firework. It's big and bright and explodey, right? So that's cool. But generally the thing about fireworks is one-time use. I think they had their one time. And luckily they cashed it in against UConn. A team that is every bit as incompetent as you think they are.
East Carolina, though, in first place in the AAC East. Tied with South Florida. Should just do that, the Corso thing, just print out the...
Yep. Get a screenshot of that. Yeah, first place.
Especially whatever one has an alphabetical order and not by record.
First place in September, when it matters. First place, you know, first place September AAC champs. Good job.
Yeah, East Carolina's schedule real quick, so you can play along at home. They host USF for the lead in the division, a gigantic game. Host Temple.
That they have a 9% chance to win. Continue.
They host Temple, go to Central Florida, host BYU, go to Houston, host Tulane, host Cincinnati, go to Memphis. That is... Their schedule is a lot harder than I thought it was. They don't catch any breaks.
No, they got the three best teams out of the West. Did anybody get the joke? I just said Tulane was the third best team in the West.
I'm sure like all the Tulane fans just like rejoice. Let's look at this week. Houston goes to Temple. What's your feel on this game? Does Houston hang up a big one on Temple? Seems like they played a weird game at Temple last time they were there, when they were actually good.
Ed Oliver eats somebody. Probably a quarterback, but you never know. And ooh. Houston.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Oh, sorry, Temple quarterbacks who are terrible. You're going to die.
I wish you luck. Have fun.
Navy goes to Tulsa. Do you think there's anything interesting about this game? Tulsa, slight favorite on ESPN's matchup predictor. Giant underdog, according to the Vegas lines, at 8.5. But getting 8.5 points at home is pretty significant.
Yeah, it's like everybody's... thinks Tulsa still has offense? Is that what's happened?
It has to be. Like, they just paid attention to the Toledo game. They scored a ton of points. I really don't know. The drive for six, SMU hosts UConn. SMU is a 17-point favorite. Like, I really want to know, without actually having to look it up, when the last time they were a 17-point favorite in league play? It has to be like forever ago. Like their first year in the league when they had Gabbert? Like that had to be the only time when it was even possible.
I don't even think then. Because they were a scrappy 6-6 team that had a good offense and could be easily ignited on defense. I mean, if you go back any further, they weren't favorites in anything, ever. I mean, maybe pre-death penalty days? It's probably been a long time since they've been that level of favorite against a league team.
looking through their league sky, I can't imagine they would have been that big favorite. That's kind of interesting. Do you think that they end up beating the hell out of UConn? Or do you see, like, UConn somehow pulling off an upset?
I think they just annihilate them.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Let's see if there's a crazy... I should have looked to see if there's a crazy over-under before I closed that page. Let's see, the over-under 76.5.
I might take you over.
It's kind of crazy.
I mean, even if it's 55-25.
But UConn's offense, averaging 489 yards a game. Kind of, on the surface, kind of impressive. Until you look at the part where they're giving up 556 yards a game. Yeah, they're going to get
it. Yeah, I mean, it's just... They're just... Doesn't matter how good their offense is. They're so forgiving on defense. It's just like... Whatever you need, they're going to give it to you. Would you like 400 rushing yards? By all means.
But can we pass for 400 yards this week? Is that allowed?
Absolutely, if that's what you want.
Well, I think
it's so. It's like the best parent. Can I have a monster truck? Absolutely. Now I want a My Little Pony bicycle. You got it. Do you say no to anything? No, because I'm deeply afraid that if I say no to anything, you will hate me forever. Good to know. Good to know. I'll mark that down.
Well, that was a very good analogy. Let's wrap it up. Last game of the week is the marquee game of the week. It's on ESPN2 at night, which says a lot about the slate of college football this week. Also says a lot about, like, the quality expected of this game. It's Central Florida hosts Memphis. Central Florida is a 4-point favorite. I kind of think they're going to win by more than 4 points.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I just think they're better and more balanced than Memphis is. Memphis has an awesome offense, but, you know, that defense has been pretty leaky for a while.
Memphis' defense gave up, 31 points last week, 45 points to UCLA, 29 points to ULM. Not really a great combo. They're going to give up a lot of points to UCF. I think their only hope is if it's a shootout. And, like, those can go either way, even though they did beat UCLA. It was probably more talented offensively than UCF. But less talented defensively, I would say.
I mean, you really went out on a limb there saying that the team that Josh Rosen is the quarterback of has more offensive talent than UCF.
Yeah.
That's why I like you, Scott. Big, bold takes.
You're not going to find a hotter take than that out there.
Yep, Josh Rosen is good.
And, like, one of the worst defenses in the country. I'm just like, oh.
You know who's not good? Jim Mora. Jim Mora, not good.
Do you think he would even be their coach right now if they didn't somehow win that game against Texas A&M?
No. No, because it's just like there's no momentum to that program whatsoever.
Go ahead.
He's unbelievable. No, like he's the Jeff Zucker of college football. He's a Jeff Zucker of football. Oh, you failed at that job? Cool. Here's another very, very good job. Let's see how you do with this one. Maybe it's going to be better. Probably not, but we'll see.
Oh, you're available now? Let us pay you millions and millions of dollars now. Please.
Yeah, good work if you can get it.
UCLA this year gave up 44, 23, 45, 34. Or no, 58. Give up 48 and 58. I was looking at their scores. That's a lot of points to give up in the game. With, like, they were a top 15 team coming into the year.
Yeah, and they've recruited pretty well. Like, they had the best defensive end in last year's class, Jalen Phillips. He plays for UCLA. He's very good. He will be a long-time NFL pro. And their defense sucks.
And they said, like, receivers added to the Blitnikoff list, apparently. Yeah, like, they should not be that bad. I guess now that we ended up talking about UCLA, we should probably wrap up this podcast. Do you have anything else to add before we end this thing?
Hey, here's to a September ending with a winning record.